Kings chapter 18. We're going to look at a pretty well-known story from 1 Kings 18. Want to once again just say thank you so much for being so kind to Sarah, Adeline, and myself. We have really enjoyed our time here this weekend. It has been a blessing to be here with you all. It's been a blessing to worship God together. It's been just a blessing to sit and talk with all of you. A lot of names that we're trying to remember, so we apologize if we don't remember your name, but we thank you so much for the kindness that you've shown us. And even if we don't remember your name, you have made an impression on us, and we really do mean that. So it's apparent that God is alive and well and working very powerfully in this group of his people. And so I want to commend you for that and thank you so much for the work that you're doing in the service of the kingdom. So we live in the land of gods. What I mean by that is in our land today, you can see the power and influence of the money god, for instance. People dedicate their lives to pleasing this god. They set their life in a direction to live wholly for this god. They'll even sacrifice their family. They'll sacrifice friendships in pursuit of pleasing this god. There's another god that we see in this land, the sex god. Again, people will sacrifice friends, family, their morals in order to please this god. We can see from like the pornography industry, for instance, that people not only sacrifice their very lives, but they sacrifice their finances in order to appease this god. And so you have an industry like the pornography industry, literally a billion-dollar industry in this land today. We have the success god. We need to climb the corporate ladder in order to appease this god, and we set our affection on this god, hoping to, in some way, please him, make him happy with who we are. We could talk a lot about other gods as well, the materialism god, the car god. You see, we live in the land of gods. Not only Obadiah, Ahab, and Elijah, not only did they live in the land of gods, but we live in a land of gods as well. And these gods are vying for our hearts. In the time of Elijah, prophet of the one true God, gods were prevalent. It was said of Ahab, who was the king of Israel at that time, that he had done more evil in the eyes of the Lord than any of those before him. And we know some of the gods that were before, or some of the kings, excuse me, that were before him weren't just stellar in their character, but they said about Ahab that he was the most evil of all. We know that Ahab and his wife Jezebel served and worshipped Baal, probably among many gods. We know Baal was the god of rain. We read in 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 1, that after a long time, in the third year, the word of the Lord came to Elijah. God said this, "Go and present yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the land." Israel, probably like this area right now, was enduring a famine at that time. So that was a good word from the Lord. God was going to send land. This was a great promise for the people at that time. They needed rain. All of you here can relate to that. Obadiah, who was faithful to the Lord, was head of Ahab's palace. Ahab had sent Obadiah on a mission. He was out looking for fertile ground for the king's cattle and a place that they could settle or the place that they could have their animals. As Obadiah was out looking for fertile ground, he ran into Elijah, like I said, one of the Lord's prophets. Elijah told Obadiah, "Go back to Ahab and tell him that Elijah is here." To which Obadiah said, "There is no way I'm going to go back to Ahab this evil king and tell him that I have found Elijah. Obadiah said something like this, because what's going to happen is I am going to go back and talk to Ahab and say, I have found Elijah. And then Ahab's going to say, okay, take me to Elijah. And Elijah is going to be nowhere to be found. Obadiah knows how this goes. And the one that's going to be on the hook for that won't be Elijah, because where is Elijah? Who's going to be on the hook for that is Obadiah himself. And so Obadiah says, thanks, but no thanks. But Elijah reassures Obadiah, and he says, I indeed will go back to Ahab with you. So we pick up the story here. This is verse 16 of 1 Kings chapter 18. It says there, so Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When he saw Elijah, he said to him, is that you, you troubler of Israel? Verse 18 now. I have not made trouble for Israel, Elijah replied, but you and your father's family have. You have abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel, and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. So Ahab, as we've already mentioned, has followed the Baals. He has turned his back on God. Remember that Ahab is a king of Israel. This is God's land. This is God's territory. But Ahab has not honored God in the way that he's been the king of that land. No, he has followed Baal. So Elijah, as a prophet of God, knows that it's time for a showdown between God and Baal. It's time to get real. It's needed now more than ever. So Elijah is asking for this showdown to take place at Mount Carmel. Continuing on now, verse 20. So Ahab sent word throughout all Israel and assembled the prophets on Mount Carmel. Elijah went before the people and said, how long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him. But the people said nothing. Elijah asked the people, how long will you waver between two opinions? We know the first commandment, Exodus chapter 20 and verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me. These are God's people here wavering between two opinions. They are trying to follow both God and Baal. And we know this is the truth. We see this in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 3. You can't waver between two opinions. You can't worship or follow both Baal and God. You see, if you're following Baal, you're not following God, even if you say that you are, because you have just broken the commandment. You are wavering between two opinions. We know about God, and we read about this throughout the Old Testament, that he is a jealous God. He considers Israel, he considers his people like a bride. It is a loving covenant relationship that he has with his people. And so you have to imagine how heartbroken he was that his people were wavering between two opinions, wavering between two gods or multiple gods. And you have to imagine that at that moment, that silence was deafening. The prophet of God cries out, how long will you waver between two opinions? And the silence that the people offer at that moment, I think, answers the question for the prophet. They are content with wavering between two opinions. They're content with their multiple gods, even though they said of themselves that they worshiped God alone. That wasn't the truth. Moving on now, this is verses 22 through 24. Then Elijah said to them, I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. Get two bulls for us. Let's choose one for themselves and let them cut it into pieces and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. Then you call in the name of your God, and I will call in the name of the Lord, the God who answers by fire. He is God. Then all the people said, what you say is good. So here are the specifics of the showdown. This is going to take place at Mount Carmel. They're going to have sacrifices on an altar. The God who responds to the cry of the prophets is the one true God. Verse 25 now. Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, Choose one of the bulls and prepare it first, since there are so many of you. Call on the name of your God, but do not light the fire. So they took the bull given them and prepared it. Then they called on the name of Baal from morning till noon. O Baal, answer us, they shouted, but there was no response. No one answered, and they danced around the altar they had made. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them. Shout louder, he said. Surely he is a god. Perhaps he is deep in thought, or busy, or traveling. Maybe he is sleeping and must be awakened. So they shouted louder and slashed themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until their blood flowed. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until the time for the evening sacrifice. But there was no response. No one answered. No one paid attention. You can see that the prophets of Baal pulled out all of the stops to get their god, Baal, to respond. But over and over again in these verses, we see that no one answered. No one responded. Elijah even taunts these prophets. Maybe he's traveling. Maybe he's taking a nap. There's sort of a euphemism in there, some scholars think. He's saying essentially, maybe Baal is using the restroom right now. Maybe that's what's taking place in all of this. The prophets of Baal cry out. They go to the point. Of course, it says in the text that this was their custom, but they went to the point of cutting themselves, saying, okay, Baal, it's time. They give up all that they can, essentially. They start inflicting pain on themselves to get their God to respond. But like I said, over and over again in the text, it says, no one answered, no one responded. So now it's Elijah's turn at verse 30. Let's look at this. Then Elijah said to all the people, come here to me. They came to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which was in ruins. Elijah took 12 stones, one for each of the tribes descended from Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, your name shall be Israel. With the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he dug a trench around it large enough to hold 2 seahs of seed. He arranged the wood, cut the bull into pieces, and laid it on the wood. Then he said to them, fill 4 large jars with water and pour it on the offering and on the wood. Do it again, he said, and they did it again. Do it a third time, he ordered, and they did it the third time. The water ran down around the altar and even filled the trench. I think, first of all, it's important to note that this whole thing starts with Elijah having to repair the altar. I think that says something about the spiritual condition of the people at this time. See, that altar hadn't been used in a while, and their lives showed it. And so Elijah has to begin by repairing the altar. I think it's also a reminder that God has been faithful in the past. God has been at work. And we need to know that it's not going to be Elijah that is going to be the star of this showdown. This isn't really about Elijah. This is about Yahweh, the one true living God. So Elijah begins by rebuilding the altar. He also has him pour water all over the altar. It's pouring down over the sacrifice. It's making the dry dirt mud. You can almost feel the suspense in this as not once, not twice, but 3 times Elijah says, drench the sacrifice, drench the altar, drench the land all around there. In no uncertain terms, when this story is over, in no uncertain terms, the people are going to get it that God, Yahweh, is the one true God. So verse 36 now. At the time of sacrifice, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, O Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, so these people will know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you are turning their hearts back again. So Elijah prayed to the Lord, and again, we need to keep it clear in our minds that it is God that is the star of this showdown. This is about the people reorienting their lives around God once again. Verse 38. Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil, and also licked up the water in the trench. When all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God. So the fire comes down. God rains the fire down, and it just burns up everything. Water at this point is on fire. Even the stones and the dirt burn. In no uncertain terms, God is the star of this showdown. He is the one true God. I think the narrator, too, wants us to get that these people praised. We're told they praised the Lord. They shouted praise to God. Remember at the beginning of the story when Elijah asked the people how long they were going to waver between two opinions, there was just silence. Now that silence has turned into praise. The way that I sort of picture it, it's overwhelming praise. They started to get it. This is a tragic ending for the prophets of Baal. I don't exactly know what to do with this story, but it's part of it. It's a tough read, if you will. So let's look at verse 40 now. 1 Kings 18:40. Then Elijah commanded them, "Seize the prophets of Baal. Don't let anyone get away." They seized them, and Elijah had them brought down to the Kishon Valley and slaughtered there. That's the Old Testament. That's our Bible. And you have to wonder, why the violence? Why do you have to kill them? I'll say this. It shows to me, it shows the seriousness in God's mind of idol worship. These prophets had been turning the people away from the one true God, which was destructive. And again, in no uncertain terms, God wants to make it clear that there is only one God. So it seems violent, but in no uncertain terms, we understand that God is the true God. Idolatry is terrible. It's destructive. It goes against the heart and will of God. So that's the story. God responds to Elijah's prayer, whereas the prophets of Baal were silent when the prophets of Baal prayed, cut themselves, screamed, did all of the things that they did. Nothing happened when they did their actions. We know why Baal didn't respond. Because Baal is nothing. What is Baal? Nothing. Baal can't breathe. Baal can't create. Baal can't move. Baal can't live in relationship with anyone. Baal can't do anything because Baal is nothing. That's sort of the humor that is in this story. And I think this silence from Baal, this inactivity on the part of this so-called God, it's a reminder to us, as we think about living in the land of gods, it's a reminder to us that the sex god, the money god, and any other god other than the one true God is nothing. They can't support. They can't give life. They can't provide mission for us. They can't provide security for us. They are nothing, just like Baal is nothing. So living for these small g gods, these idols, if you will, it's a dead end. They give no hope, life, joy, anything like that. They don't breathe. They don't care who they destroy. Of course, they promise happiness. But when worship, and we see this all of the time, when worship, they only bring frustration, broken relationships, and character crises. That's what worshiping these gods do. And of course, these gods of our day are vying for our heart, like we've mentioned. And so we hear words in our world today about economic crises and violence and foreign policy. We hear all of this type of language. And so in the midst of all of these gods and idols that are around us, we have to remember, we come together as a church to remember that there is only one true God, and that is Yahweh. And that's the one that we see revealed in Jesus Christ. He is our true God. He is the only God. Yahweh, God, listens, cares, responds, protects, and guides. He loves us like a husband loves a wife. We have to notice the conclusion of this story, verses 41 through 46. And Elijah said to Ahab, "Go eat and drink, for there is the sound of a heavy rain." So Ahab went off to eat and drink. But Elijah climbed to the top of Mount Carmel, bent down to the ground, and put his face between his knees. "Go and look toward the sea," he told his servant. And he went up and looked. "There is nothing there," he said. Seven times Elijah said, "Go back." The seventh time the servant reported, "A cloud as small as a man's hand is rising from the sea." So Elijah said, "Go and tell Ahab, hitch up your chariot and go down before the rain stops you." Meanwhile, the sky grew black with clouds. The wind rose. A heavy rain came on, and Ahab rode off to Jezreel. The power of the Lord came upon Elijah, and tucking his cloak into his belt, he ran ahead of Ahab all the way to Jezreel. So Elijah told Ahab, in faith, he said, "Go eat and drink, for there is the sound of a heavy rain." And we remember about Baal that he was the rain god, so to speak. But we see the God who had made the promise that he was going to send rain, at the end of this story, sends the rain. It's not Baal that sends the rain. It is God, the creator of all, that sends the rain. It's one more reminder in this story that Baal is nothing. God is the true God. He desires our allegiance, our faith, and our love. God is faithful to his commitment. He's faithful to his promises. He said he would send rain, and he sent the rain. I think whereas the silence of Baal is a reminder of the futility of worshiping gods like Baal, money, success, entertainment, and even ourselves, the sound of the heavy rain that God sends is the reminder of the importance of worshiping him alone. And so I think in our lives, if we wanted to sort of use language for today to kind of get this in our minds, we hear the sound of the heavy rain. We hear the activity of God. We hear God living up to his promises, God fulfilling his promises when we get caught up in living out the mission of God. We hear the sound of the heavy rain when we witness souls come to him. We hear the sound of the heavy rain when we see the church serve, give, and love. We hear the sound of the heavy rain when we see the tomb empty. We hear the sound of the heavy rain when we feel his presence. You see, God is faithful. He's the one that sends the heavy rain. So we'll worship this God, the one true God, and we'll do everything we can as a church to put those other gods aside, understanding that those other gods aren't anything. In fact, here's this stool here I was talking about. Now this for a moment is going to represent a throne. And so we'll just work with it. I know it doesn't look like a throne at all, very throney, I guess. But let's allow this for just a moment to remind us or kind of get in our imaginations that this is a throne. Let's allow this to represent sort of a throne of our heart. For so many of us, There is someone that is the king of our lives, someone who is front and center of our lives, that is other than the one true God. And so, like we've already mentioned, we allow money, we allow materialism, we allow worry, we allow stress, we allow struggles to become the king of our life, and it consumes us. And so this throne is occupied by something other than the one true God. We know this from the story that only one thing, only one personality, only one entity can occupy this throne. Who is it going to be that occupies this throne? I think for me, just being open, I think for me, oftentimes, it's me on the throne. And so I control my life. I say what's going to happen. I dictate what my future is going to look like. And so often I need to be reminded that it's not me that sits on the throne of my heart, but it is the one true God. He's the one in control. He's the one that's going to set my footsteps in the future. He is the one that is going to dictate what my life is going to look like. It's time for us as a church to give God his rightful spot back at the throne. He is the only one that has the authority to sit on this throne. Will we allow God to be the king of our lives, to have him have the spot that only he is due? I don't know if you all usually offer an invitation at the PM service. I know that I would be so glad to pray with you and to walk alongside you. I know there are ministers here and elders here that would be so glad to pray with you and for you if you have different struggles. I know all of us are doing all that we can to allow God to have his spot on the throne in our heart. That's a struggle. So we'd like to pray with you and for you if that's what you desire. If there's anybody here this evening that is ready to put their Lord on in baptism, we'd be so glad to help you in that. Also to witness you come to Christ through baptism. So if you have any desires like that, you can come forward, see a minister or elder as we sing this song.
Sing them over.